Jen Malecha is a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner and trained in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. She works with health-minded professionals to take back control of their health and wellness. In today's episode, we talk avoiding environmental toxins, supporting your thyroid, and the gut, liver, and thyroid connection. There's so much more in this episode. It's great, so please enjoy. Welcome to the Kat Kativi Podcast, your source for all things health, happiness, and beauty. Hi, Jen. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Hey, Kat. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited about our discussion we have as we were just preparing for this. We have a lot of juicy things to share with your audience today.
I love talking about functional medicine and the gut-liver-thyroid connection, so we're going to get into all of that. But first, tell us a little bit about your journey into functional diagnostic nutritionist and NLP and what that is and what you do.
Yeah, I'm sure as most of the people that you've had on here on the podcast, like I have my own health journey, which is part of how I got into this work. I naturally have always been like a health-minded person. And growing up as a kid, I was super active and my parents had a garden and all that kind of good stuff. So I actually went to college and studied kinesiology, which is the study of the body. And I emphasized in fitness, nutrition, and health, and came out of that and went into the personal training and fitness industry originally. So I was a personal trainer for a long time and worked in management running like big box gyms. And through that process, like my health just started declining over the years. Like I started to develop like really intense, severe seasonal allergies where I would get ear infections and it would wipe me out for like days at a time. I started to have really just odd things happen to me, like having sensitivity to chemicals, which I know what that is now, but back then I didn't really understand what that was. All I knew is that if I was around a Sharpie marker for an extended period of time, I would get a migraine and feel nauseous and have to go home. And then finally, what kind of put the nail in the coffin on this piece of my story was I was diagnosed with skin cancer around the age of 25, I think it was, somewhere between 24 and 26. It's so long ago now, I forget. But when that happened, it was like this moment to step back and go, how did this happen to me? Because I'm the healthiest person that I know. Like I work in the fitness industry. I exercise every single day. I was eating like we were told to be eating back then. Like I was eating broccoli and like boneless, skinless chicken breasts and eating every 2 hours. And when I would go to the doctor, like for my annual physical, they would tell me all the time that they wished all of their patients were like me, that ate like me and moved like I did. And I was like perfect on paper, but I didn't really feel that way. And that's what inspired me to start looking externally for answers. And I came across Reed Davis, who's the founder of Functional Diagnostic Nutrition, and that training course. And I immediately dove in because when I heard Reed talk about this different way of looking at disease and like from a functional perspective, it was like all the pieces of the puzzle came together. And what fascinated me so much about it was that I had taken biology and physiology in college and all these courses, and nobody had talked about the body in this specific kind of way. And so part of that training program, you do all these different functional lab tests on yourself. And this is what provided all the answers for me and how I wound up with cancer in my body, is that I had really high oxidative stress levels, which is basically a marker for cellular DNA damage. I had a very congested liver, so it wasn't detoxifying very well. I also had various types of bacteria overgrowing in my intestinal tract and in my gut, and I had some hormone imbalances that were going on. So you can see it's like the perfect storm for then cancer just to populate in that area. Through that training program, I learned a lot of the work that I do now with clients and being able to run functional labs and utilize that data to personalize and guide recommendations for diet, rest, exercise, stress reduction, supplementation, and toxin removal. And I'm happy to say that I'm sitting here with you today, totally skin cancer free, and have been ever since that point, and actually reversed my seasonal allergies, the chemical sensitivities, and all the issues that I was having. But that wasn't the only thing that's happened to me. And I know your audience here, we've got a lot of people with autoimmunity and hormone balances. And so there's actually a second part of my story. And as I tell people, even though you might resolve like whatever your initial health issues are, like life still happens, we still move through life. So fast forward a couple years, I started working from home because after taking that training course, I was like, yes, I'm going to go be an entrepreneur. I'm going to start my virtual functional health coaching practice and work from home, which I did. And a couple years into that, I started to put on weight really slowly. Over the course of a couple years, I gained 15 pounds. I started experiencing or having cystic acne, and I had never had acne before, not even as a teenager going through puberty. I never had acne. And then also started grinding my teeth at night, and then my breast became really inflamed. And I joke about this now that my breast are my barometer when anything's off with my hormones, because they'll get like sensitive or stuff will happen. So long story short, we discovered that we had mold in our house. And from that point, I also discovered that I was estrogen dominant. This exposure had triggered Hashimoto's for me. So I was hypothyroid at the time. And so luckily I had all of these tools in my toolbox to apply to myself. And I was able to reverse my Hashimoto's within 6 months and rebalance my thyroid and recover from all of that. And that's been 6 years at this point in time. And I'm like sitting here living my best life talking to you. So in a nutshell, that's the story. And along the way, like you mentioned, the NLP work that I do. So NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. So as part of being a functional health practitioner and resolving my own issues, I also recognize that there's this huge mindset side of things. And when I look back at my journey and go, how did this all come to be? Like, one of the things that I recognize is that because I consider myself like a busy professional, super A-type personality, I was just literally like grinding my body into the ground. Like, even though I felt tired or didn't feel great, I would go to the gym and work out super hard, and I would work 12-hour days and all of these things. As I tell my clients now, is that the definition of insanity is like doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, right? So if you want to have a different experience in life, you probably have to learn how to navigate life differently, which maybe means disassembling some of those old belief systems and thought patterns and creating new, more supportive ones to help you create a new lifestyle and long-term sustainable results for you and your body. So I really love diving into that piece with people. And I've had to make a lot of mindset shifts myself to be in this healthy place here today.
Your story is incredibly, unfortunately, common. I hear that all the time. I have a similar story. The same things with the chemical sensitivity, and I couldn't be around paint. Like, I used to be able to paint. I was like an artist, and I couldn't be around paint. That's like the most ridiculous thing ever. And cleaning products, and then estrogen dominant led to like hypothyroid, like the whole thing.
All the things.
All the things. So like, why do you think women especially now are getting all of these issues, and it's becoming so common that they're saying that soon, I think it's going to be almost half the population, at least in the US, will have hormonal imbalances, women?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things that is contributing to this scenario that we're facing right now is toxins in our environment. And this kind of relates to our topic also today of the thyroid and the liver connection, and also the gut connection too. It's really interesting because starting out in my business, like, one of the things that I've provided to help people in their health journeys, I do a seasonal cleanse challenge. And the cleanse challenge is all around helping people detoxify their bodies and for over the course of 4 weeks. And I remember when I first started this, and this comes up now, but when I first started doing this, I was promoting it at my kettlebell studio. And one of the people there works in the traditional medical system, he was a nurse or a nurse practitioner of some sort. And we already have detoxification organs. Like, why would we need to do a cleanse? And I was like, this is such a fabulous question, because let's really think about this and look at this. And if we look at the history of what has happened over the last 50 plus years, basically since World War II, essentially, there hasn't been an introduction of hundreds of different toxins in our environment since that time. And I don't even know what the statistic is at this point in time. It's definitely been quoted over 120,000 different toxins. I think the last I heard was over 200,000 different toxins have been introduced to in our environment in a very short, condensed period of time. So yes, we do have detoxification organs. However, from an evolutionary standpoint, we have not evolved quick enough to be able to handle the burden that we now face from a toxic standpoint. And so because humans have a longer lifespan, it takes longer for evolution to occur versus other animals that have shorter lifespans, for example, then the genetic mutations and like the changes in the cellular structure can happen at a quicker rate, but we live for a very long time, right? So here we are facing this ginormous burden of toxins, and these toxins are a big part of what is then now contributing to hormone imbalances. If we look at things like our personal care products, I know you talk about like happiness and health and beauty on here. So personal care products, like how many phthalates and parabens and BPA and plastics and things are in our personal care products, in our household cleaning products, in the paint on our walls, the fire retardant that's laden into our furniture these days. We are bombarded with this stuff all of the time. And then when you encounter something like I did with mold, now you have a very intense exposure over a period of time that just then weighs down on the body system even more. And so the toxic burden, I think, is one of the biggest pieces when we think about this. And so when the liver then is overloaded, when it's burdened with all of these toxins, then we see things like the liver can't function as well as it should to excrete excess estrogen. So then we get this estrogen buildup in the body, or some of these specific toxins and chemicals actually mimic estrogen in the body. There's actually a classification of toxic chemicals that are called xenoestrogens. There's actually a really great book that I love to recommend to people if they want to understand the exposure of estrogenic compounds in our environment. It's written by a scientist. It's called Estrogeneration. And so they're finding elevated levels of estrogen, for example, in polar bears, because it is so rampant in our environment, right? So again, this all overloads the liver. We have things that increase estrogen. We also then have toxins that are stuck with the body that can't get out. And those toxic elements will then start to degrade and wear down the intestinal lining. And I know you've had some people on here that have talked about the autoimmune piece of this and how gut health and the intestinal lining is where we house our immune system. And it's incredibly important to keep that space healthy in order to regulate the immune system to prevent autoimmunity. The intestinal lining, it gets this wear and tear and it's stripped down from these toxins and chemicals that are in the environment and that are stuck in our body. Then that's when the immune system becomes suppressed or weakened and overwhelmed, and we can get those autoimmune things. Those autoimmune conditions can be triggered, or toxins in the environment can be triggers for an autoimmune condition. So if you have a genetic predisposition to autoimmunity, along with already a level of what we call leaky gut going on, like this gut dysfunction, and then you encounter some of these toxins in the environment, that is like the trifecta to trigger something like an autoimmune condition. So these toxins are in our food, right? We've talked and people know about this. We know herbicides, pesticides. Now we've got GMO stuff that's going on. So it's literally everywhere. And the reality is like, we can't live in a bubble and avoid them 100% because we can't always see, hear, feel, or smell them. But the goal is ultimately is, okay, what can we do to reduce our exposure as much as possible with the things that we can control? And then how can we support the body, give it extra support, knowing that the detox organs have not had the time to evolve, in order to help facilitate the elimination of these toxins out of the body so they don't get trapped and result in these issues in these kinds of ways.
Yes, there's so many toxins in our environment now that I just found out that even your clothing, not just like the fire retardants in some pajamas, but all your clothing now, they're slowly switching the fabrics to like more plastic-based fabrics. And then you go out into the sun and you're sweating and it does break down over time. And then it's being right absorbed. They have even underwear made with this new fabric called modal and other plastics. Of course, there's polyester. There's all these other chemicals that are literally on our skin 24/7. Or our shoe soles could be made out of plastic. Like these little things everywhere, we're getting exposures that people always say that I'm such a Debbie Downer, because I'll tell people, oh, you have estrogen dominance? Check your shoes, check your clothes, check not just your mattress, your furniture, make sure it's not off-gassing this, and have plants and go off. And people are just, it's so overwhelming. I just want to give up.
It is. I like to help break it down for people and prioritize that. I'd love to share this with people who are feeling a little overwhelmed. There is a lot to think about. And I'll be honest, I love me some Lululemon clothing. I don't know if I'm going to give it up, or some Athleta stuff. So how do we just create this balance and minimize? And so I have people focus in. The first priority is thinking about the things that are going into your body, because that's going to have a direct impact. These chemicals that are going to have a direct impact. So number one priority to focus on when we're thinking about how can we eliminate, minimize toxin exposures is food we eat every single day. You eat a couple times a day like that. Every single time you eat is an opportunity to minimize your toxic exposure. So making sure that you are eating organic and non-GMO foods, right? So that's actual solid foods. And we can think of water goes into our body as well. Like how often we're supposed to be drinking at least half your weight in ounces of water every single day. So I need to be drinking 75 ounces of water every single day. That's a lot of toxin exposure potentially. So you want to make sure that water is really clean. And then also the things that are touching your food. So using glass or stainless steel water bottle and glass or stainless steel food containers. And what are you cooking your food and what's touching it? Like the using a stainless steel or cast iron like pans and utensils and things like that. So that would be the first thing that I would have people focus on, is swapping out some of these things and making sure that part is solid. And from a water perspective, that's a whole other rabbit hole that we can go down. And just having a Brita filter or using the filter on your fridge is not even scraping the surface of the toxins that are in there. I have been recommending more recently for people like getting an actual water distiller. You can grab one off of Amazon for about $300 and use it repeatedly. It lasts you for, I've had mine for almost a year now. It's been great. But a distiller is the only thing that extracts 100% of the toxins out of the water for you. You do need to add minerals back in. So replacing and supplementing with some minerals if you're going to do that. But again, that number one priority is anything that goes in your body. So once you get that part down and you're solid there, then the second part, the next priority I say is anything that goes on your body. So this would be like your lotions, your shampoo, your conditioner, because whatever you're putting on your body gets absorbed through the skin and still has to be metabolized. Any of those toxins have to be metabolized through the liver and the digestive system. So now we start swapping out personal care products, your makeup, your hair care stuff, those types of things. And so once you get that down, then I say, okay, let's look at the rest of the environment. So this is like cleaning supplies, swapping out your mattress for one that's not off-gassing things. I just went through this process. We had a Tempur-Pedic for 10 years, because I bought that mattress before I knew all of these things. And by the time I figured out these things, I was like, well, it's done. Most of it's off-gassing, but it was breaking down. So we went and searched for an organic mattress, tried the avocado, didn't love that one, actually ended up with a fully organic latex mattress that we absolutely love at this point in time. So I also tell people that this is a progressive thing. Like, don't feel like you need to go throw everything in your house out. It's like when you run out of something, look at that as an opportunity to swap it for something different. So we can then be progressively starting to eliminate the load over time that's happening without feeling overwhelmed by it.
Yes. And I also went through that during the pandemic. I remember we switched to a latex mattress, just like you did, from the Tempur-Pedic. And also I went through all of my skincare products, and I just, because they were all getting old. So I'm like, dump them all. And every time I bought one, I looked on the Environmental Working Group, I believe, website. Yes. Each ingredient took me weeks.
Yes.
Until I finally found my products for makeup, skincare, hair care, everything.
Yes. And I love that Environmental Working Group, or EWG for short, is a fantastic resource. They have an app that you can get on your phone. So like when you're at the store, you can be scanning personal care products or cleaning products, and it's going to give you a toxicity rating on those products so that if they're like toxic or not, or where they fall, like it's basically a scale. And even I'll go on there if I'm looking for like a new cleaning product, like we just got new wood floor, so I needed wood floor cleaner. I just went on there and I just searched wood floor cleaner and found something that was low toxin, and then went on Amazon and ordered it really quick. So they have wonderful resources. They also have a really great resource for water where you can go and type in your zip code and it will show you all of the toxins that are in your local water. which is pretty astonishing when you actually take a look at that stuff.
Yeah, I did not know about that. And that sounds like something I would do and then freak out.
Right.
So when you're in the shower, is there any filters that you like for the shower?
Oh gosh, yes. I didn't touch on that with the what goes on your body phase two is like also thinking about water as you shower or as you bathe. And this is especially for our thyroid people. 100% here is like chlorine, bromelain, and fluoride are very toxic chemicals for thyroid. It actually prevents the uptake of thyroid hormone into the cells. So it can bind to the receptors and block that stuff. So this is where, yeah, like thinking about the quality of the water that you're showering in and bathing in is really important. And I love a company called Aquasana. They have some really great shower filters on there, really reasonably priced. I want to say like in the $50 to $100 range, essentially. You can actually also have really great customer service where you can get on and talk with them about what's going on with your water. Because for example, I live in San Diego, and here in San Diego, not only do we have chlorine, but we have something called chloramine. And so there's specific filters that help to filter some of that stuff out. And I'll tell you, like, from a beauty perspective, when we made this switch in our house, my hairdresser like immediately noticed the difference. She was like, "What is going on with your hair? I do color my hair." And she was like, "Your color is like staying so much better and your hair is growing like crazy." And we had just recently like basically changed our water filtration system and have these shower filters. And she was like, "Your hair is just so much healthier. It's not as dry. And so this makes such a big difference." And I notice this too when I do travel and I shower in a hotel now, I feel like there's like a residue on my hair when I'm showering. It's like I didn't get all the shampoo or the conditioner out of my roots and it feels a little bit greasy versus when I'm at home, it feels totally clean when I shower because I'm showering in filtered water, basically.
Yeah, about three or four. Actually, I think they doubled it to maybe 8 times a year. I'm in Miami. They do the chloramine like a very intense treatment and they don't really tell you. Maybe you see on the website in a tiny little area and you have to click there. So now we are very aware of it because I remember the first time it happened, I lost tons of hair. My husband lost tons of hair and we got very dehydrated. We started breaking out like crazy. Wow. We were more bloated, like a whole thing. And then that's when my thyroid problem started because I was still not filtering my water and going to restaurants and learn.
Oh yeah.
They're really good filters at restaurants.
Like here's my, when I go to restaurants, I love sparkling water anyways, but I always will get some type of bubbly water, like a Pellegrino, something that comes in glass that's not being served out of the tap water there. Unless they say that they have purified water, even then I still question like if it's purified or not, like how purified is it essentially?
Yes, that is true. So yeah, I do the same thing. I go for something bubbly.
It's more fun anyways.
It is. So can you tell us about how functional testing is different than what you might get from your doctor?
Yeah, this was the eye-opener for me is that I was going to the doctor and getting regular blood tests done, like my typical annual physical, and everything came back looking normal. And it wasn't till I did the functional testing that I really got these insights both times, way in the beginning with my health journey about the skin cancer stuff. And then also figuring out like later on when we had the mold, like the estrogen dominance and the Hashimoto's and the thyroid things that were going on with me is there too, which part of that, as I mentioned, one of the reasons that all of that was triggered for me was because the mold was creating such a toxic load on my liver. And also mold toxins mimic estrogen in the body. Like my body could not excrete all of this excess estrogen that was going on. It just couldn't get it out. And then with that, elevated estrogen can trigger things like Hashimoto's, for example, or hypothyroidism as well too. But I see this so often in the clients that I work with is that, and this isn't even from a functional perspective, but it's like a specific functional lab test perspective, but it's more of a functional lens that we look through. So like I have clients all the time that come to me and they've had their thyroid tested and they've been told that their thyroid is normal, but they're not getting a full thyroid test done. They're usually just getting TSH, sometimes they're lucky to get TSH and T4, and sometimes they're lucky to get a T3 along with that, but they're not getting antibodies done. They're not getting reverse T3 done. They're not getting T3 uptake done to really understand the bigger picture of what is going on from a thyroid perspective. So looking through that functional lens, we can still use some of these quote unquote like conventional tests. Like to test the thyroid, we have to do a blood test, but we can have a greater perspective of what's going on with the thyroid when we look at these things. So when I have clients get their thyroid tested, it's always like the panel includes the TSH, it includes total T3 and T4, it includes free T3 and T4, it also includes reverse T3 and T3 uptake, and then both of the antibody markers. So this will help us to understand from a TSH perspective, how the pituitary gland is signaling the thyroid to produce hormone, then the T3 and T4, really T4 is that what the thyroid is then releasing as hormone, and then T3 is the conversion of T4 into T3. So then we can look at conversion elements, for example, and a large majority of T4 is converted into T3 in the liver and in the gut tissue. So this is why we want those tissues to be healthy as well. And then reverse T3 is looking at, are the cells saying no? Are they like, nope, we can't take any more T3 in, we're full. And T3 uptake is looking at how much T3 is getting up into the cells. So we can understand those pieces of the puzzle as well too. And then of course the antibodies are going to tell us the picture of any autoimmune process. And even if your antibodies are on the lower side, there is a spectrum for autoimmunity, and people aren't diagnosed with an autoimmune condition until they've crossed the clinical threshold for that. So this is why, and Kat, this may have been your experience, you may have this experience, you've heard this a million times, is people will say, I think the average is like, it takes 7 years for somebody to get diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, and they've gone to like multiple doctors over time. And it's usually not until they land in the hands of a functional or an integrative doctor or practitioner like myself, where we're looking at not just the clinical threshold for diagnosis, but we're looking to see if somebody's on the spectrum. Do you have antibody activity that is indicating that there is an autoimmune process in place? So that's the functional lens on the thyroid thing. Other tests that I love to run that complement this as well and give us these deeper insights. So functional lab tests are going to help us to look at the physiological aspects of the body. What is happening? How are the different systems of the body operating and maybe working together or not working together? One of my favorite tests is a Dutch hormone cortisol test. So Dutch is an acronym. It stands for dried urine total comprehensive hormone test, basically. So this is a urine test that you do that helps us to look at your sex hormones. So it actually, this is what I love about it versus a blood test, is it looks at three different estrogens versus on a blood test, you're usually just getting one or maybe two. It's also helping us to look at phase 1 estrogen metabolism, which gives us some clues about liver function. Because if your phase 1 estrogen metabolism, which is the estrogens metabolized through the liver, is not looking great, then that can tell us or correlate back with the fact that the liver is probably not, it's burdened, it's not being able to do its job really well. We also can see insights on something called methylation on there to know like how the hormone is being converted and detoxification is happening, as well as we look at like progesterone, testosterone, which give us insights there. And we look at the cortisol picture. Cortisol is such a great insight for so many reasons. And this is where people will feel like they have inflammation going on or they suspect it, but then they go and get like a conventional marker done like hsCRP, C-reactive protein, which is an inflammatory marker. And maybe that inflammatory marker comes back that it's like normal, but they are still having problems. That's a general inflammatory marker that doesn't really isolate or target anything, any information for us. We can see that marker correlate with inflammation in the body with these other functional tests, though, sometimes too. So cortisol, when we look at cortisol in the Dutch test, cortisol rhythm and cortisol output, along with some of the steroid hormones like DHEA on there, can really give us this greater picture of chronic stress and inflammation that has been taking place in the body over a prolonged period of time. When we look at the cortisol rhythm, which is, in order to see this, you have to do a 4-point test. So when you do this urine test, you do 4 samples throughout a 24-hour period. we can then see insights into your, what we call your circadian rhythm. There is an internal clock within the body, and we have this hormonal rhythm that is supposed to happen as a result of that. And so when we see that the cortisol rhythm is out of balance, that means that the circadian rhythm has been knocked off. And then we can look at the different points in the day where cortisol is out of balance. And now we can correlate with specific things that would elevate or make cortisol dysfunctional at that point in time. So for example, when I see cortisol elevated in the evening time before somebody's going to bed, this will often correlate with they feel wired but tired, or they get a second wind. And this is where they're like, oh, I'm going to finish up this little work project that I had over here. And then they end up going to bed late. And that will correlate with having gut bugs like parasites, bacteria, yeast overgrowth in the gut, because those organisms are nocturnal. And so when we're trying to go to sleep, they're getting active and creating internal stress and inflammation, which is then triggering the release of cortisol. Sometimes it can correlate with food sensitivities, that you ate something at nighttime that your body was sensitive to, created this inflammatory response, and then we get an output of cortisol as a result of that. Or light or temperature exposure at nighttime that's tricking the body into thinking that the sun is still up, and so your cortisol is not coming down. So you can see how this test can be incredibly insightful for a lot of different reasons. We can pull so much data out of it. And then probably my other really favorite test to run in correlation with this is Diagnostic Solutions GI Map, which is a stool sample test to look at parasites, bacteria, yeast overgrowth going on in the gut. We also get other intestinal health markers, like we get to look at the immune system's response. We get to look at calprotectin, which is an inflammatory marker related specifically to the GI tract. And we get to look at how well you're digesting protein or not, and fats as well. And we also get a marker on there called B-glucuronidase, which is a toxic enzyme that can trap toxins in the body. So if I see somebody that's got estrogen dominance issues, phase one metabolism issues, and then we see this toxic enzyme elevated on the stool sample test, we're like, oh, this thing is trapping some of these toxins in the body and not letting it to get out of there. So obviously these are not things that you're seeing on a regular blood test. Like, we have to go into this like deeper functional perspective, the physiology of the body, to really sniff out some of these clues. I love my mentor, Reed Davis, the founder of Functional Diagnostic Nutrition. He had this great analogy of being a health detective. I consider myself a health detective of sorts. And he's, if there was a burglary in your house, like, a detective would not come in and look at the basement and the attic and not look at the living room, right? And so in our health perspective, that's the approach that we take from this functional testing standpoint, is that we're looking at all compartments or all rooms of the body to find all the clues to understand the big picture of what's happening and sort it out so that somebody can feel like better.
So what do you recommend for parasites? Because I know like we're exposed to parasites no matter what we do. If you have pets, and a lot of people, they sleep with their pets and they're indoor, outdoor, or they kiss their pets. Not me, but other people do this. Yeah. So I'm imagining everybody's got parasites, and it's not culturally done every season like it is in the past or in other cultures.
Yeah. I sleep with my pets, guilty, I'll just say. I don't necessarily kiss them on the mouth, but I do snuggle with them. And the thing is that parasites, bacteria, and yeast are part of our natural ecosystem inside. So you're always going to have a small amount of them. When they start to overgrow is when they become a problem. So that's something that we can see, for example, on the GI Map stool sample test, is we can see values on there. Are they below the detectable level? Is it above the detectable level? And then is it getting flagged as high to really understand what's going on inside? And the question we want to ask here is that when we see the overgrowth, is you want to ask, well, what makes you a good host for that? Why are you susceptible to that overgrowth? And that overgrowth is problematic because those organisms produce their own byproduct. As gross as it sounds, like, they produce bug poo, they produce die-off and waste product that then creates inflammation and stress and toxins that get harbored in the body. So we don't want that accumulation of stuff that's going on in there. But you have to ask yourself why you're a good host for this, because in a healthy environment, your immune system and your beneficial bacteria, like the probiotic type of strains that we have going on in the gut, would be able to keep this stuff under control. So that's what we want to look at. What are all the contributors to the scenario? And so diet can be one of those things. Like, what is the quality of your diet? Are you eating inflammatory processed kinds of foods that are wrecking the internal environment? Also your sleep. So if you're not sleeping according to your internal clock, your circadian rhythm, which the critical window for sleep is 10 p.m. till about 4 a.m., making sure that you're asleep by that time and sleeping through the night during that time, so that your body, like in the middle of the night is when our body fully recovers itself, because we're sleeping. We're not busy doing other stuff. So it can focus its attention, blood flow, all these things internally for total healing at nighttime. Exercise. A lot of people think that, or we've been conditioned to think that exercise is the answer to health. And in some ways it is part of the puzzle. Yet at the same time, when you're already in a depleted state because you're not eating great, or you're not sleeping through the night, or you've got a lot of toxins in your environment, working out at a certain intensity could actually be breaking down your body more and depleting it more. So we need to be conscious of our exercise intensity given the state of our health that we're in. And then stress, like mental, emotional stress is another big one. So when we're mentally or emotionally stressed, our body actually produces negative biochemicals. And these biochemicals can actually wear down the intestinal lining. They can contribute to biofilm, which is like a protective layer that allows these gut bugs to proliferate, essentially. So when I, going back to your question, Kat, like when I work with somebody, we are looking and finding these things, and then we're asking the question, what is making you a good host for this stuff? We're looking at diet, rest, exercise, stress reduction, toxin stuff, and then along with that, looking at supplements that are going to aid in the process. So specific supplements that are going to help to restore the integrity of the intestinal lining and heal it. Specific herbs then there are going to address the overgrowth of any of the gut bugs that we've got going on. But I'll tell you that one of my pet peeves in our industry, and essentially, is I can't tell you how many people will come to me and be like, I got tested for candida. I did a candida cleanse and I felt better for a while. And then now I feel crappy again, right? Or they've been treated, quote unquote, for parasites or whatever. But the reason that those things are not going away or that they're coming back is because oftentimes you're not addressing what makes you a good host. So just doing a candida cleanse and going sugar free and doing some herbs, but not addressing the long-term aspects of your diet, your sleep cycles, the stress that's going on in your life and the toxins, you're not addressing how you got into that space in the first place that we need to touch on, basically.
Yeah, that's so true. If you go right back to what you were doing to get the problem, you're just going to get the problem again. Are there any foods or supplements that you find beneficial for those with a sluggish thyroid or backed up liver?
Yeah. One is I love to guide people towards just moving towards an anti-inflammatory diet. And when I say that, I consider the basics to be like gluten. We know here in the US specifically how like toxic and inflammatory gluten products can be because of how we grow food here in the US. It's much different than it is around the world. Dairy is another one of those things. So gluten and dairy from a molecular structure look very identical to each other. Little fun fact is that the cows here in the US actually have a genetic mutation that makes their milk product more inflammatory than cows across the world. So unless you can source great cheese and things directly from Europe, then we should probably stay away from it for the most part or do it in very small moderation amounts. Soy is another huge one, you guys, especially from like soy will mimic estrogen in the body. It's also one of the most genetically modified and contaminated foods. And then everybody knows sugar is not our friend, essentially, but we can't seem to stay away from it. I'm mostly talking about like processed sugars, artificial sweeteners, added sugars, like having a little organic fruit here and there, a little organic coconut sugar, not going to be such a big deal. Again, we want to keep those things in moderation. And then from an alcohol perspective too, like alcohol is very inflammatory to the body. Great general rule of thumb, especially for the women out there trying to balance their hormones, is like 4 drinks or less per week. So that still allows you like 2 glasses of wine on a Friday and a Saturday, right? That is, so going towards that anti-inflammatory diet, I think is a big thing. And then you can add in foods that are going to help to promote detoxification. So some of the most natural, like most powerful, like detoxifying foods are going to be things like beets. So I love to shred just raw beets and sprinkle them on my salads or cut them into chunks and cook them up and roast them on a regular basis. Lemon and grapefruit is another one. So adding a slice of lemon into your water, occasionally having some grapefruit would be great. Just be cautious of how much like you're having from a sugar standpoint. We want to make sure we balance those things with proteins and fats. And then another one that it's not so well known, but it's so powerful is dandelion. And dandelion is not everybody's favorite food. It's a green, it looks like spinach or like a kale or something that you get at the store, but it's definitely bitter on the bitter side. So if you like bitter foods, you can saute it up with some olive oil and some garlic or something like that. Otherwise, what I will turn people to is dandelion tea. So you can get dandelion tea. It's got like a nice earthy flavor. It's herbal, so there's no caffeine involved in it. And it can help you then, like it helps a lot of my clients get in their water consumption for the day because they get bored of drinking just water. So dandelion is a great thing to do. And then water is a part of this like formula as well too. So in order for us to eliminate toxins out of the body, they have to be attached to a molecule of water. And we know that our body is made up of 80% water. And I can't tell you how many people I talk to. Everybody is chronically dehydrated. Nobody is drinking enough water. So general recommendation that I kind of mentioned this earlier is like half of your body weight in ounces. So if you weigh 200 pounds, you should be drinking at least 100 ounces of water. And then for every caffeinated drink that you have or 30 minutes of exercise that you do, you want to add 8 ounces on top of that. And I use my water bottle to help me keep track every single day. So those are some like food kind of perspective things. From a supplement standpoint, this is where I really like to personalize things for people based on the lab data that comes back, essentially, because it just depends on what's going on with their body. Like we talked about with the stool sample test, we can see that toxic enzyme, B-glucuronidase, that's preventing toxins from getting out and burdening the liver. In that scenario, I would then recommend a supplement called calcium D-glucarate, which helps to break down that enzyme so that now we can move the toxins out of the body and that helps to support the liver. But from a general standpoint, I think that everybody should be taking a good quality liver support supplement, something that contains like maybe some milk thistle, some artichoke root, some dandelion in there. So I really love a brand called Metabolic Maintenance. They've got their metabolic detox supplement that just we talked about the load that's on our liver every single day. So we know that it needs help. And so taking a liver support supplement on a daily basis can be incredibly helpful for this type of stuff. Taking a great quality probiotic is high on my list of everybody should be taking something like that. I also think like doing bone broth on a regular basis, it's full of nutrients. So we can see that as a food or a supplement type of resource. So the nutrients help to restore the intestinal lining, keep it healthy. You get a little bit of protein in with that. Collagen's another thing that's very similar. It has similar healing benefits as like bone broth does as well too. And then minerals. So we are so mineral deficient and electrolyte deficient. Another huge one here, you guys. I really love, it's LMNT, Element. They have a brand of electrolytes. They have some wonderful flavors. It's actually like Rob Wolf, one of the godfathers of founding the paleo movement. It's a company that he's participated in helping with the formulations of these electrolytes. So I love those for people and for myself. And then to be adding in minerals, like having a really good quality broad spectrum mineral complex. I love something like Designs for Health Complete Mineral Complex or CellCore has their CT minerals because we know that our food is not as nutrient dense as it used to be. It's one of the problems, but also especially when we encounter things like toxins or even yeast overgrowth in our gut, those things will actually strip minerals out of the body. And so something like minerals is essential for thyroid function specifically. Like you need, for example, selenium to help convert T4 into T3. So making sure that you're getting in adequate amounts of minerals every single day. You can also start to supplement some of this. It's not going to cover all of your minerals, but just generously using Himalayan or sea salt is another way for us to get like magnesium and sodium and potassium minerals and electrolytes into our body. So don't be afraid to use those things either. So those are some quick tips. And I would say like anything beyond that, again, I really look at the functional lab test to guide what somebody needs specifically for their body and what state that they're in.
And I always say that sea salt is very different than table salt. People get scared that they're going to bloat or get puffy or something.
Yes, I've had clients say that too. And when we make the switch, they're always so surprised that they actually feel leaner and the bloating goes down because they're getting the right amount of electrolytes. And those electrolytes from salt that we get, the magnesium, the potassium, and the sodium, are actually essential for your adrenal function, which is what helps to produce cortisol and keep your cortisol levels regulated as well too.
Let's talk about sleep. I know you say that sleep is more important than diet and exercise. I 100% agree with that. I would say that if I feel off or I'm bloated, I'm just going to go take a nap or go to sleep another hour. And usually I wake up and it's gone.
Yeah, I think this is one of the most overlooked things in the whole health scope. I actually was just at the Metabolic Health Summit a couple weekends ago. And there was a doctor that was there from the Salk Institute that gave this great talk about circadian rhythm. And I was so excited that he was talking about circadian rhythm because that relates to our sleep. And I was, at the same time, I was disappointed because he gave this great talk about circadian rhythm and the importance of having eating windows. And he talked about the importance of sleep, but he did not talk about the importance of the time frame in which we sleep. And this is the thing that is missed hugely. And I mentioned this already earlier, but let's dive into it a little bit deeper here. One is that you cannot like out diet or out exercise or out supplement poor sleep habits. So as I started to briefly mention before, there's this critical window of time that we should be sleeping. And that's from about 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. And this is based on our internal clock, which is ruled by the sun and the moon cycles. So when the sun rises in the morning time, light and temperature increase, which then triggers the body to release cortisol for energy. So that's what gives us energy to get up and get going in the morning. And it peaks about 2 hours after waking. And then it slowly tapers off throughout the rest of the day. And then as the sun sets and the light and temperature decrease, that's what then triggers the body to bring cortisol down to its lowest point, so low energy for sleep. It's also what signals the body to start releasing melatonin, and you get your big dump of melatonin a couple hours after the sun sets, like around that 10 p.m. time frame. This is also when your body starts to release a hormone called human growth hormone, which is what goes around and like repairs cells and damaged tissues. And so from that standpoint, the body is preparing for you to be in what we call parasympathetic mode. So parasympathetic mode is the opposite of the sympathetic mode, which is like the fight or flight stress mode that we tend to be in all day long. When we're in the sympathetic fight or flight mode, all of our blood flow goes out externally for quick moving and quick thinking. So it's not available internally for repairing and nourishing organs and like digestion and on detoxification. But at nighttime, when we're supposed to be in this parasympathetic state, when we're in that state, all the blood flow goes internally for digestion and detoxification, right? And in Chinese medicine, they actually do this really well. You guys can Google a Chinese medicine body clock, and you will see all of these diagrams on these circles where it shows like a clock, and it shows when the body does specific functions throughout the day. So based on this internal clock that's ruled by the sun and the moon cycles that we have no control over, there's certain things that the body is doing throughout the day. And with the sleep component, like I already mentioned, this is when we do all of our restore and repair. It is the ultimate healing window. On top of that, we spent this whole time talking about all these toxins in our environment, and your detox organs do their major work in the window of about 1 to 3. So if you're not sleeping during that time, like a lot of people will say, I wake up to pee in the middle of the night, and it's oftentimes that window between 1 and 3, you're disrupting the detoxification process when that happens. If you're staying up past 10 p.m., your body does not shift its internal clock according to your social life or your personal preferences or choices. So you're missing those windows of opportunity at 10 p.m. when certain hormones start to get released and certain functions are taking place. So this is where a lot of people, they might go to bed at 11 or midnight and they sleep the recommended 7 to 8 hours, but they still feel tired in the morning time. And this was a thing that I like came up at this conference and like asked this pointed question. I'm like, with the circadian rhythm, can you please speak to the importance of, it's the general recommendation of 7 to 8 hours of sleep is missing this huge piece. That 7 to 8 hours should be starting and happening by at least 10 p.m. You can go to bed earlier. So every hour of sleep before midnight is worth 2 hours of rest. So if you go to bed at 9 p.m., that's even better to get your 7 to 8 hours of sleep into that 4 a.m. window. But this is where we need to, this is where we have a huge opportunity to give our body the space and time that it needs to actually heal so that our hormones can do their job, so that we can get toxins out of the body, and so that we can wake up feeling energized and feel our best on a regular basis. And this is why you can't out diet, out exercise, or out supplement poor sleep habits, because if you're not sleeping great, you're not detoxifying, it's going to add up, or you're not repairing cells and tissues, it's going to add up. No amount of supplementation, exercise, or diet is going to resolve any of those things for you.
Yeah, I hear a lot about how when I say stuff like that to people, they're like, what about in Spain when they have dinner at 11 or whatever, and they're all thin and they seem healthy? And then I'm like, they also have a big chunk of the day where they're sleeping. They have their little break in the middle of the day. Yes. Yeah. And that's super like beneficial. And plus, they're not as stressed as we are. They probably don't have the same amount of toxins. It's a different world from what we have in the States.
Definitely. And what's interesting about that comment also, because I love to travel, so I go to Europe a lot, is that you see those late dinners happening in more of the modern cities. If you actually go to the more rural parts, like of the country, of parts of Europe, like they still, because they still farm and they still do all these things, they're definitely going to bed earlier than somebody in the city is that's going out and having dinner. Like I remember being like, on the Amalfi Coast, and like things do shut down earlier around there, or in Cinque Terre and different types of places, or out in Tuscany. So we also want to adjust that perspective to recognize that there has been some modernization over there, and that they may not be as healthy internally, even though they might look at externally as well too, right?
Yes, that's a good point. I remember when I was there, everything did close like pretty much right around sunset. It was like really hard to find a restaurant open.
Yeah.
So what are some, give us some examples of daily routines that you do yourself that keep you healthy, detox, feeling good?
Yeah, obviously one is going to bed on time. I'm very protective about my sleep. It is very rare that you will find me up past 10 p.m. It's got to be like a wedding or some kind of celebration that is amazing. So sleep, being asleep by 10 p.m. on the weekends, Fridays and Saturday and Sunday nights, I'm sometimes even asleep by 9 just because I don't have work and other things. So it's easier to get to bed earlier. I always get up with the sunrise. So that is a part of being in sync with your circadian rhythm. So even when I travel, in order to reset my clock to the time zone that I'm in, I will look at booking flights and doing things, aligning it within so that I can align with my circadian rhythm, and then getting up with that sunrise in the morning time to get things going the way that they should. When I get up in the morning, the first thing that I do is go to my water bottle to start getting in the right amount of water per day. And my water bottle, I've got like my 32-ounce guy here. I will put a packet of electrolytes, some glutamine, some creatine in there. And then my next thing is movement. We are, based on our circadian rhythm, it is best for us to do our more intense exercise and movement in the morning time, earlier in the day. So aim to get that done. And then as we talked about earlier, mindset stuff has been a big part of my journey. And so meditation is a huge part of my morning routine. So I really carve out my mornings. Like we scheduled this interview a little bit earlier than I would normally like start, but we're on different time zones. So just being accommodating there to those instances. But generally, I don't really start work until about 9:30, maybe 10 o'clock. Essentially, and then taking like a nice, at least an hour long lunch break. And when I eat my lunch, I really aim to sit outside in the sun, like decompress from all the computers and stress from work, maybe even go for a quick walk around the block to get in some of that movement that helps to move our lymphatic system and helps to move toxins out of the body. And then in the evening time, eating a really healthy dinner, we go for a walk again in the evening time, just something leisurely, take the dog out, get that lymphatic system moving again. And then generally in the evening time, I'll do some combination of detox support routines, like maybe wearing a castor oil pack, which helps to stimulate the liver, to detoxify, and helps to heal the gut. Or sometimes I'll do a coffee enema, or I do more meditation and some journaling. So those are the times for me to really support my body in these detox ways and the mindset stuff as well too. And then again, sliding into bed, being asleep by 10 p.m. In a nutshell, that's what my healthy routine looks like.
How often do you do coffee enemas? Curious.
Currently, right now, I am in the process of detoxing some recent mold exposure. So I am doing the coffee enemas about 4 to 5 times a week at this moment. But that's not a usual routine. It's just for this specific protocol that I'm in. So from once I move out of this phase, I could see myself maybe doing it like once a week, just on a maintenance schedule, essentially.
Okay. Because I've always wanted to try those because I hear they're so beneficial, but I'm just like, it's weird. What if I don't get all the little specks of coffee out? I have these crazy thoughts.
I resisted it too, girl. Like at the beginning, I was like, oh, hell no. And then really had to... Once I contemplated, I knew it was going to be so helpful for my body. And it was more so just figuring out the logistics of how it all works. And so I had to take a Sunday where I didn't feel rushed and I could just give myself some space to figure out how this was going to work. And honestly, now like enjoy it, which is a weird thing to say, but I binge my Netflix while I'm like laying there on the floor with my doing my coffee and my stuff. And it's been really fascinating to see the things that are coming out of my body as a result of it. Like some of the gallstones and like gut bugs and all different kinds of things have been coming up.
Super fun. So yeah. I do have another question about that. Since it's caffeine, I'm thinking, does it keep you awake? Should you do it early in the morning?
It doesn't for me. So you want to make sure that you're getting a really good therapy roast, by the way. You don't just use any coffee when you do this. And so it hasn't seemed to be impactful for me. I do know that some people tend to feel like sensitive with it. So you can dilute it more. You can start with a more diluted version of the coffee mixture. Or, and ultimately, if it just feels better, you can definitely do it in the morning time. I just feel like I have more, for me, it just fits into my routine in the evening. So there's better benefit to doing it in the evening time necessarily. So I think this is where you just got to figure out what works for you ultimately.
Okay, that sounds cool. So I'll look into that. Before we go, could you tell us a little bit about your health coaching, how everybody can work with you?
Yeah, I do one-on-one work with people so we can get really personal and do all the lab tests and recommendations like we talked about today. I do offer also throughout the year, like I mentioned, my cleanse challenge, which is like a 4-week challenge to dive deeper into creating a supportive environment for your body to detox better. Essentially, and all that information is on my website at Holistic Health Boss, and holistic is with a W, like Whole Foods. I'm also super active on Instagram, so people can reach out to me at the Holistic Health Boss on Instagram, ask me follow-up questions, connect with me over there. But I'm sharing a ton of this information that we've talked about today. It's just like resources for people to check out on a regular basis, because I know how hard it can be trying to find solid, grounded information that's practical that you can implement. So that's my goal, is to help people find the missing pieces of their health puzzle so they can actually fix what is wrong and get back to feeling like themselves again.
So is there anything else you'd like to leave the audience with before we go? And I will also put everything in the show notes so everyone can go and find you online.
Yeah, I would just like to say that whatever your circumstances are, I love to just tell people that it is possible to feel better, even if you feel good right now. This was something that I've recognized along the way in my journeys. When I thought I felt good, then I could reach another level of feeling better. And I like to say that in the work that I do, like I'm in the business of making the impossible possible, and that there is a unique formula or scenario for every person out there. Like all of us are unique individuals, and therefore the solutions for you are going to be unique too. And I hope that our conversation today maybe brought some pieces of the puzzle together for those that were listening.
Thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you.
I had an episode a while back with Dr. Mona Fahoum of Feminescence, and we spoke about Feminescence, Maca Harmony, and their Maca products. And if you're a woman who's ever had hormonal imbalances, if you're trying to come off the birth control pill, or even if you're going through menopause, this is a natural way to help ease that transition and to help balance your hormones. There's nothing quite like it, so go to feminescence.com, enter code KAT15, KAT15, for 15% off any of their single pack products, and definitely go check out the episode. Just search for Mona Fahoum on my podcast and listen. You won't regret it. Thank you for listening to the episode. If you made it this far, I'm sure you found some benefit to the hard work that I put into the show. Show your support by subscribing to the podcast, leave me a voicemail question, or email me at thehealthfulgypsy@gmail.com. I would love, love, love to hear from you. Be sure to join the Facebook group. You can find all that information in the show notes and my website, katkatibi.com. This podcast is for informational merrymakings and metaphysical purposes only. Statements and views are not medical advice. This podcast, including Katkatibi, disclaim any adverse effects by the use of information you may have heard. Opinions of guests are totally their own. This podcast does not endorse statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications, credibilities, or sanity. Individuals may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to on the podcast. If you think you have a medical problem, consult with a licensed medical physician, not just the spirit of your ancestors while on ayahuasca.